We'll call the Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:30 p.m. Please remember to silence your cell phone as a courtesy. We're meeting today, Monday, March 20th, in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Committee members present are Senator Begich, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Geisel, myself, Senator Wilson. Senator Michicki is expected to come in a little later. Today we will hear the Alaska Citizens Review Panel. Presenting today is the panel's chairman, Dr. D. Walker Vadapalli, and he is an assistant professor of public policy at ISER and teaches in public administration program at UAA. Doctor, please feel free to come, and you may begin when ready. And we've asked committee members, if they do have questions, feel free to have more of an interactive presentation today, as that was sort of the doctor's wishes to make sure we don't miss a point if there's something to be discussed at that present time.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present to this committee. This is the first opportunity in 15 years of this panel's existence. Sorry.
Just remember to introduce yourself, Doctor.
Sure. Thank you. My name is Diwakar Vadapalli. I am the chair of the Alaska Citizen Review Panel. I'm also an assistant professor of public policy at the Institute of Social and Economic Research at UAA. As I was saying, this is the first opportunity in the panel's 15 years history to be presenting to this committee. Some of you may be familiar with the history of the panel and its purpose. In fact, Senator Coghill, Representative Coghill then, in 2005, sponsored HB 53 that instituted CRP back in 2005. So before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge Rebecca Whale, a member of the panel from Anchorage, who is on the phone. I think she called in already. She is going to take over as the chair of the panel starting July 1st of this year. I'm stepping down as the chair. I've been on the panel for 5 years now, and I've been the chair for the last 4 years. I want to acknowledge other members of the panel. Margie McWilliams, she's an attorney, GAL, here in Juneau. Dana Hallett, who is from Haines, former foster parent and retired teacher. He has been the vice chair for 4 years. And Sonia Hull from Wasilla and Biddy Ann Statue from Anchor Point. That's the members of the panel. As I go through this presentation, on several occasions I will mention several challenges the panel faced over the last 4 years since I've been the chair and the vision going forward. This is the outline of the presentation today. Brief history. Congress mandated CRPs through amendments to the Federal Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act in 1996. Federal statute requires that all states have at least three panels, with some exceptions that were allowed to have one panel. And Alaska is one among seven states that fall within that exception. Please note that there is only a minimum number of panels that a state can have. In fact, there are more than 340 panels across the country. Some states that with county-level CPS systems have a panel for each of their counties. Alaska CRP has been functional since May 2002, when OCS was still DFYS. In 2005, when HB 53 was passed, the panel had been producing its annual report by then and conducting town hall meetings across the state. These town hall meetings later transformed into in-depth site visit reviews. I do not have all the historic records of its budget before 2005. A fiscal note accompanying HB 53 identified $64,300. For the panel's expenses, which included a half-time position and money for member travel expenses. An OCS staff person was assigned half-time to support the panel. Panel's work between 2002 and 2005. Beginning in 2005, a private consulting firm was contracted to provide staff support. The entire CRP budget, including the money for its members' travel, is routed through this contract that is still in place. The panel's current annual budget has increased to $100,000. All members are volunteers, and together we contribute about 2,000 volunteer hours per year towards the panel work. It has always been a small panel with no more than 9 members at any point in its history. The panel is a statutory body with a very broad mandate. The slide shows both federal and state mandates. And the keywords are highlighted in red. The state mandate is almost a mirror image of this federal mandate. Two functions are, first, the ACR, the CRP's focus is policies, procedures, and practices of state and local CPS agencies. In Alaska, that is the Office of Children's Services. Two functions are clear from these statutes: evaluate and conduct public outreach. A third function, advocacy, is not mentioned in the statutes, but was discussed during the debates in Congress in 1996 when the amendments to CAPTA were being voted upon. The primary functions. The central focus of Alaska CRP's activities are the policies, procedures, and practices of OCS. The panel has three specific functions: review, outreach, and advocacy. Under review or evaluate function, the statutes identify three standards against which such an evaluation should be conducted: state's CAPTA plan, CPS standards, and other criteria. While the first two are rather clearly defined, the third one really opens up any component of OCS operation for review by the panel.
Question. Before the question, just want to acknowledge that Senator Maticki came to join us. Senator Baggage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, on that third point, bullet point, what are some of the other criteria that the panel has identified, or we'll be hearing about that later?
I'll briefly mention an example. Other criteria can be anything that the panel comes across in a site visit. Say we're out in Bethel examining the office, and we hear some concerns about security of workers in the field when they're out there. That is something of concern, and because it came up during a site visit, that is a criteria that we use, saying, okay, it came up in a site visit, it's important, we should pay attention, check it out. Or a legislator comes up to us, comes to the panel and says, this is something that is important to me, and it is a pattern, you want to check into this, let me know what you find. That's another criteria.
Follow-ups under baggage?
Mr. Chairman, so it'd be fair to say that in your recommendations that you provide, that you're required to provide on an annual basis, you would discuss some of these points that come up, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Outreach, the second function. Outreach, collect public opinion to assess the impact of OCS policies, procedures, and practices on children and families. Such assessment should inform the CRP review above. Advocacy, make recommendations for relevant changes in CPS policies, procedures, and practices. Beyond that, advocacy is a slippery slope for CRPs because it does not, the statutes don't mention advocacy clearly. The congressional record says that CRPs are expected to advocate, but it is not clear, so we have certain criteria around how CRP in Alaska advocates. So the central purpose of the CRP, from the statutes, congressional record, available published literature, and numerous discussions with other panels across the country, one thing became clear over the last few years. CRPs exist to help CPS agencies in each state. Congress recognized that CPS agencies across the country were growing more insular from the populations they serve. Public participation in these systems was seen as a necessary reform. To that effect, Congress created CRPs to be those mechanisms for public participation or community engagement in child protection. CRPs are the only statutory mechanisms with that specific purpose. They are expected to facilitate robust and meaningful participation of citizens in diverse roles to assist the state's child protection system in being more responsive to the needs of the families and communities of the state. Congressional record is clear that CRPs are to provide, and I quote, regular citizens, end quote, regular citizens, not just child protection bureaucrats, end quote, an opportunity to set policy and suggest best practice. Again, the central idea is, with the input from citizens that are being served and the larger community, OCS's policies, procedures, and practices will be more responsive to the citizens' needs. This is OCS's mission on the slide. OCS is a complex agency with a difficult job. Its mission, as mentioned on the agency's website, is to, I quote, work in partnership with families and communities to support the well-being of Alaska's children and youth. Services will enhance families' capacities to give their children a healthy start, to provide them with safe and permanent homes, to maintain cultural connections, and to help them realize their potential. The key words are highlighted in red, partnership with families and communities. The CRP's purpose is to bring forth voices and opinions of those families and communities. There is obvious synergy here between the mission statement that's on the slide and the congressional intent behind CRPs. From this mission statement, it is clear that OCS is a service agency trying to serve families in difficult circumstances, not a police agency watching over parenting practices. CRP's role is to help OCS devise services that meet the needs of families and communities it is mandated to serve, specifically by channeling input from them to OCS. The significance of OCS is often not very clear in many contexts. OCS faces a constant dilemma. As the Ombudsman's report in 2012 states, and I quote, "With the exception of the criminal justice system, which may take one's money, one's freedom, and in some states, one's life, it is difficult to imagine a more fear-inspiring authority than the power to take away a person's children. This power gives OCS an aura of a police agency. How that power is exercised and leveraged is key to its success. OCS is entrusted with an awesome power and huge responsibility. This power and responsibility are exercised by frontline workers and their supervisors. They face many difficult and traumatic choices that can mean a lifetime of good or bad for a child and her family. A lot of good is done, more than we get to hear in the news. But, like all of us, OCS workers too make mistakes, except their mistakes can be very expensive. That is why, as OCS mission statement says, partnerships are important, and thus the CRP, which is the only statutory agency or mechanism set up for that specific purpose, is an important forum for those partnerships to flourish." I hope the last few slides made the role of a CRP and its functions clear to you all. I often find it easier to list the things the CRP does not do than to explain what it does, because it's so vague and broad. As I said, although advocacy was mentioned in congressional record, it was not part of the statute, and refrains from commenting on any proposed or pending legislation. That's a criteria that Alaska CRP set for itself because of the slippery nature of advocacy in the CRP world. It is important to note that CRP is set up as a systems-level review mechanism. It has no role in individual cases, contracts, or situations. This is key because there is a lot of room for confusion here. Many times, CRP is approached with requests to intervene in cases or contracts. CRP has the statutory authority to review individual cases or contracts, but it should do so with a systems perspective, not to revise decisions in any one individual situation. Along the same lines, CRP does not micromanage OCS. For example, CRP cannot handle complaints against caseworkers or supervisors. Another important thing, CRP is not set up to conduct program evaluation. It evaluates the procedures and practices of OCS as stated in its own policies, the agency's policies, and other legal statutes. It is a broad systems level evaluative function. The panel does not lobby either against or on behalf of OCS. Bottom line, CRP is a statutory institution. CRP is an institution with a statutory role and responsibility. It is an organization of the state. It facilitates citizen participation. It must cultivate a critical but constructive lens. It exists to help OCS by channeling critical but constructive input from families and communities to OCS. Its success depends on its relationship with OCS, a relationship that ensures meaningful recommendations from CRP and carefully considered response from OCS. This is a delicate relationship that needs clear structure and continued nurturing. This is the lay of the land. I apologize for some of the numbers are not current, but I will point out the changes that are needed on this slide. OCS currently has more than 500 employees, close to 530 employees. But this is the lay of the land. There are five OCS regions, and its field offices are scattered across the state. The field office in Unalaska, which the map shows that it exists, is actually closed. It is not in existence anymore. It was closed in 2011, I believe, and the field office in Galena was flooded and closed in 2014.
Senator Begich?
First, is it Doctor? Or is it Doctor?
Yeah.
Padwali? So is the rest of the data on this sheet accurate? The turnover, the kids, the operating budget?
Yes, Senator Begich. The operating budget is more than $150 million this year, or at least that's the proposed. And turnover for the last 15 years has been between 25 to 35% on the front lines. This is in the PSS's Protective Service Specialists. Recent numbers are lower than in the previous years, but it's still about 25% from what we understand.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Machicki.
Just a clarifying question. Turnover is over 35% on an annual basis?
Yes, Senator Machicki. Yes, it has been between 25 to 35% annually for the last 15 years. This is the CRP's annual calendar. This is a typical CRP calendar. This one is from last fiscal year. Alaska CRP begins its year with the fall retreat in August or September to identify its annual work plan. Each year, the work plan identifies a set of goals and the annual calendar that includes meetings and travel. CRP is required to meet at least once a quarter. After all its quarterly meetings are open to public. These are public working meetings for citizens to witness the work of CRP. Each quarterly meeting has a 20-minute slot for an invited guest to speak to the panel. The panel meets with OCS leadership every month between October and June during its work year. That is, director of the division and the division operations manager has been available for the panel every month. These meetings are meant to build relationships between OCS and CRP, discuss various policies, specific initiatives, and other details of CRP work through the year as they come up. The panel conducts site visits every year. A small group, 2 to 4 members of the panel, visits a regional or field office of OCS to collect input from OCS workers in the field, various stakeholder partner agencies, and individual foster parents. The panel does not have a systematic way to reach birth parents or foster children. We've been working on trying to devise systems to reach these constituencies, but we still don't have a good system to do that. Foster parents, we made quite a bit of progress. In the past, it used to be random selection, whoever we could reach. Now we are trying to establish a more systematic way through the Alaska ACRF, Alaska Center for Resource Families, which trains foster parents. They have a good network of foster parents. In addition to presenting to the legislature every year, the panel presents to other interested and relevant groups such as ICWA Workers, CJA Task Force, Children's Justice Act Task Force, and Court Improvement Project, etc. This was our work during last year. We had 4 goals. We did 4 site visits, and each site visit has numerous interviews. Together through the year, we go talk to more than 100 individuals across the state. 4 monthly CRP quarterly meetings, 7 meetings with OCS leadership. There were lots of presentations. We conducted the OCS staff survey last year, which was quite a bit of effort, and ended the CRP National Conference. These were the goals. Each goal listed here was picked due to the relevance and importance of that goal at the time. The annual work plan goes into considerable detail on reasons for identifying each goal. These goals were pursued through the year through policy review, data analysis, discussions with more than 100 individuals in key positions across the state, and the OCS leadership. In the next few slides, I'll present recommendations from these goals. This was the first recommendation in our annual report. Our annual report was released June 30th. Every year, it comes out on June 30th, and OCS is required to respond to the annual report in writing within 6 months of its release. So OCS response was released just before December 31st last year. Let me give you a little background behind this recommendation. OCS and numerous tribal leaders and tribal organizations in Alaska have a very complicated relationship. This has been evolving over the years. In 1994, a group of leaders from various Alaska Native tribes and OCS established the Tribal State Collaborative Group, TSCG, as a forum to build OCS tribal relationships and to address many differences. In recent times, OCS tribal relationships have further evolved. Most recently, a strategic plan for transforming child welfare outcomes for Alaska Native children was prepared and released in mid-2016. This plan identified six priority areas. Most notably for CRP, community engagement is one of the six priority areas. Several objectives were identified under this priority area. It is important to note here that CRP has been focused on OCS tribal relationship for several years. Specific recommendations in past years suggested that OCS should better structure the relationship of OCS workers and tribal ECWA workers. Every year, the CRP surveys ECWA workers about their relationship with OCS workers. It is also important to note here that CRP is not just a review mechanism. It's not just a watchdog mechanism. It has a substantial outreach and community engagement responsibility. CRP was invited to participate in a visioning session for this strategic plan in May 2015. During the early stages of this plan preparation, the panel was not invited to any subsequent discussions until the plan's release. The plan simply does not mention CRP. While the CRP applauds the effort and the vision this plan represents, the irony of ignoring an existing statutory mechanism for community engagement cannot be lost, thus this recommendation. And the recommendation specifically is calling on OCS to identify a clear and specific role for CRP to help OCS in implementing this plan. In response, OCS invited CRP to participate as a stakeholder in any of the six priority areas and committed to keeping the panel informed of the proceedings on each of the areas. So every priority group copies the CRP coordinator, thus the CRP members, on all of their proceedings and all their agendas as they meet. All their schedule is open to the panel to participate. This is a welcome development. However, this leads to another challenge. CRP is not a stakeholder that can dial in when it is interested. It is a mechanism with a statutory duty to facilitate dialogue between a section of stakeholders and OCS. CRP as a stakeholder is a mischaracterization. A more meaningful approach would be to identify an appropriate and specific role for CRP to implement sections of this plan in partnership with others leading this effort. This is the central point of this recommendation. It is not sufficient to just ask CRP to call in when they're available and interested. They have a role and responsibility, and they should be fulfilling that responsibility. If the CRP does not have the capacity, it is in the interest of OCS and the community at large to enhance its capacity. The second recommendation came from the same goal, the first goal that we had on evolving tribal OCS relationships. And we all can agree that despite all the negative press coverage about OCS, child protection needs additional resources. In difficult budget times, every leverage must be employed. This recommendation simply acknowledges the assets tribal partners can bring to the table and for OCS to leverage their partnership to this end. The third recommendation, despite numerous hours by volunteers and good faith effort by many involved over the years, including the leadership at OCS, the CRP has been an afterthought for a long time. There is no oversight over the CRP or its relationship with OCS. The panel existed without a set of policies or bylaws for 13 years since it began operations in 2002. The panel had been in violation of state sunshine laws until January 2015. While the 2005 statute asks the DHSS commissioner to institute regulations, that was never done. With no regulations or operating procedures or policies guiding actions of its members, staff, or OCS, there is continued confusion, uncertainty, and unclear expectations around the panel.
We have two questions here, Dr.
Yeah, I just want to go back to a point you just made about the regulations, because I did see, I pulled the statute and I looked at the statute before coming to the meeting, and under the duties of the state panel, 47.14.215, Section C, it says the commissioner shall, not may, shall by regulation establish policies and procedures necessary to carrying out the duties of the state panel under this section. And that session laws of 05, it's that's 12 years ago. We don't have regulations after 12 years for the government, for the governance of the CRP?
No, we do not.
Can you quick follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Bates, but also as a reminder, we will hear from the department on Wednesday as well.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Can you explain why that is?
I just realized, I'm sorry, I broke the protocol. Senator Biggs, through the chair. I've been on the panel for 5 years, and I've been the chair for 4 years, and 3 years in a row, or at least three times over the last 4 years, I brought it up to the notice of the commissioner and the director of OCS. And it's a combination of lack of capacity to put in resources to put the regulations together, and a certain level of lack of clarity in the exact role of CRP and its relationship with OCS. It's a combination from my perspective, and and not everybody may agree with me, but that has been my observation.
Follow up, Senator Baggage?
Just very, very, to the chair, I find that a little disturbing. It is a shall clause, and the ambiguity in the relationship may be why we need regulations. It's just a thought.
And I guess this, for my follow-up for this, Dr. Wood, do you have communications upon the requests of CRP asking for regulations to the department?
Yes, Senator Wilson, I have email communications I can produce for your
if we can share that with the committee, that would be wonderful.
Sure, I can do that.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. To the next point on oversight, there is no oversight over CRP, nor was there any evaluation of its work. This is a double-edged sword. The CRP may or may not be doing its job, or may not be. OCS may or may not be responding adequately to CRP recommendations. This leads to erosion of accountability of the entire mechanism and fails the congressional and legislative intent of having a CRP, which is to help OCS to be more responsive to community efforts or community needs. Excuse me. Effective oversight mechanisms over the CRP enterprise would be either the legislature or the general public and stakeholders impacted by OCS policies, procedures, and practices. While the panel continues to meet with individual senators and representatives every year, as I mentioned earlier, this is the first time in 15 years that CRP had an opportunity to present to the Senate HES Committee. The only statutory requirement that is monitored by the federal government, since it is a congressional mandate, is the production of its annual report and a response from OCS. The quality of either documents is never assessed. The panel rarely receives any queries or requests for clarifications of its work or its recommendations. While its recommendations are not legally binding on OCS, they can result in meaningful action only through legislative oversight of the process. Since the CRP could not generate greater interest from OCS, DHSS, or the legislature, it set out to conduct an evaluation of its own structure and its relationship with OCS last year. That was one of the goals for us. There are many areas for improvement, as the panel found out through the year. The ones shown are the most significant ones, the ones shown on the slide, internal structure and process of CRP in order to improve efficiency, and CRP-OCS statutory relationship in order to ensure clear roles and responsibilities. The state is required to provide adequate staff support for the panel, and it does so by allocating $100,000 of its general funds every year. This fund is routed through OCS budget, with OCS or DHSS having the authority to expand or contract the budget as the agency sees fit. In essence, the panel reviews the policies, procedures, and practices of an agency that controls its budget. This arrangement, by definition, is not wrong or impossible to work with, as long as the purpose and role of CRP is clear. However, due to continuing lack of clarity in expectations and in the absence of any regulations, this arrangement leads to avoidable conflicts of interest. Moreover, routing the entire CRP budget through a private consulting contract creates difficult ethical dilemmas for the contractor. A series of such dilemmas led to an unpleasant transition in staff support during the summer of 2016, causing considerable delay in the panel's work for 2017. This is not to dispute OCS's claim that it worked collaboratively and respectfully with CRP over the years. That was their response in response to this recommendation. Yes, they did that. Every year there was a lot of respect and collaboration between the entities. This recommendation is pointing to the need to assess effectiveness of such collaboration and respect. Neither collaboration nor respect can replace effectiveness. Recommendation 4, CRP and OCS have been discussing the staff survey of OCS since 2012. In 2015, OCS asked the CRP to conduct it. The CRP leveraged a graduate class that I teach at UAA in the public administration program and conducted the survey and compiled the results. Unlike the past years, results were reported separately for frontline workers and other staff at OCS. With around 30% turnover among frontline workers consistently over 15 years, it is important to understand the perspectives of the frontline workers, and the CRP felt that is necessary, so we separated the results. Since this was the first time an external entity was conducting OCS staff survey, the agency requested we do not ask any additional questions than already being asked in the survey. The survey results document was released in July 2016. Main findings of the survey include workers hold their immediate supervisors in very high regard. This was a very positive result from the survey. Workers also felt that the community at large do not understand the purpose and work of OCS. This puts the onus on both the agency and the CRP with a responsibility for community engagement to ramp up their work on improving public awareness about OCS. The recommendations on the slide that you see there were made based on several other findings to improve the survey efforts. This survey asked several questions about training provided to OCS workers, but all training-related questions were focused on a 2 to 3 week training workers received from the Child Welfare Academy at UAA shortly after signing up for their job. Scientific evidence is clear that it takes about 2 years for a new frontline worker at a child protection agency to learn their job well. This implies structured training opportunities should be available throughout the first 2 years of a new hire and beyond. Many such opportunities may be available at OCS. However, the current survey does not allow collecting information about those. As a result, the survey paints a very limited perspective of workers' training needs and the actual training they obtain. In response to the first bullet, OCS, in their response, says, there are many training opportunities for OCS workers after they complete their initial training, and, I quote, it knows, end quote, that workers struggle with transfer of learning from training to field. This is contradictory because one of the central purposes of on-the-job training is to help with help to improve transfer of learning. The recommendation is asking OCS to verify if available on-the-job training opportunities are helping to the extent they should. In other words, it's not sufficient to say that we know it's helpful. We need to assess and make sure it is helpful. And if it is not, why not? The current survey is already long, and many aspects of the workers' life at OCS are not covered by it. It is not clear if there are other surveys or other mechanisms through which OCS leadership collects this feedback. One of the findings from this year showed that feedback channels from front lines to the leadership need to be improved, thus the second bullet point. We need to break the survey into sections, and some sections need to be done every alternate year, so the length of the survey is kept manageable. OCS conducts stakeholder surveys with foster parents, Alaska Native tribes, and other service providers. Results from all these surveys are similarly documented. Basic question-by-question summary of responses from everyone that answered the survey. Sometimes this is helpful, sometimes it is not. When we have sections of populations, when the people who are answering these surveys are not homogenous, it's not the same group or same type of people answering these surveys, it's helpful to break them up into different groups and examine their responses. It is not evident that any in-depth analysis is conducted to inform policy or practice. That is not to say that it is not being done, it's just not evident. Since resources are scarce, and the third bullet suggests leveraging entities such as CRP to conduct such surveys. OCS resumed conducting its own staff survey this year. The CRP is looking forward to getting the data and conducting some analysis.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machik.
Is it fair to say with a 30% turnover rate in 2 years for a new frontline worker to be fully competent, that you're only getting 1 year of active, efficient, qualified service for employees. If you're replacing the entire department on the OCS side just over every 3 years, and you're only, it takes 2 years to be fully qualified, right? Can one assume that you're only getting 1 year of really efficient service per employee?
Senator McKechnie, through the chair, it is a tough challenge. If I understand your question right, there is high turnover rate among the frontline workers, and we invest a lot, or the agency invests a lot, in training each individual worker, only to see that they move on quicker than the agency would like them to stick around. That is a very clear challenge for the agency. And yes, the agency ends up losing a lot of resources in training workers who are leaving. But I think that the leadership at OCS will probably be able to better answer that question. We did not, as a panel, assess the amount of resources that go into training workers and the impact of turnover on agency's ability to perform and the impact on how much resources they're losing in terms of training workforce that is leaving.
Follow-up, Senator Matricki?
No, just to put it more simply, I mean, just from the two statements that I've highlighted here, you're replacing the department just over every 3 years, 100% of the employees. That's not to say that one employee doesn't become a long-term employee that's highly qualified and effective, but as a whole, you're only getting one solid year performance out of the department as a whole, if you think about the turnover in 3 years and it taking 2 years to be an effective, fully qualified employee.
Senator McKechnie, through the chair, yes, that I think there is, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Senator Giesel?
Well, just following it, on that, you know, statistics can be interpreted different ways. It may be that two-thirds of the employees are actually long-term employees, and there's a third that come in and aren't suited to this kind of work. It is highly stressful. You used the word complex. Absolutely. You're dealing with human beings, and we are very complex people. And so every case is different. So I'm interested in hearing from the department, and as you said, Mr. Chair, we'll hear about that on Wednesday. But, you know, I think we need a little bit more fleshing out of this particular statistic. Thank you, though.
Senator Giesel, through the chair, That is a very important observation, and the panel over the last 4 years have been collecting data from OCS on their turnover rates by region, just for the frontline positions, the PSS, the Protective Service Specialist positions, which see the 30% turnover. One of the reasons we've been doing that is to really nail down where the turnover is happening by geography, and the reasons for turnover, why are people leaving? And what we found out from the data that we have so far is majority of the people who actually leave resign and leave the agency, not just move within the agency across the state or within the agency up the ladder, but majority of the turnover is because of resignations leaving the agency. What does that mean? We don't know yet. And we haven't really explored and had a conversation about it, but yes.
Any follow-up, Senator?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich and
I. Certainly.
Senator Begich?
I think that actually answered my question.
Okay. Senator Matricki.
Just two more important numbers that combining all of our interests here, I think, is not only the 30% turnover rate, which is 100% in just over 3 years, if you look at it that way. If not, the 2 years for a new frontline worker and becoming qualified. But just two other things for the department to prepare to present as average length of OCS service and average length of service by region, I think would give us a more clear picture.
We can definitely ask the department ahead of time to see if they can prepare for those numbers.
Thank you.
Please continue, Doctor.
Thank you. The next recommendation is CRP as a mechanism for public participation. Over the last 4 years as the chair, I focused on clarifying the purpose of CRP, because that is one of the biggest challenges I saw as I came into this position. The panel had lengthy deliberations over the last 4 years, reflecting on its role and purpose. After extensive conversations with many across the nation, the review of congressional record, past documents of CRPs across the nation, scholarly literature, and other documents published over the years since the early 90s, before the actual statute came in place, it became clear that the panel is a mechanism for public participation. It is not just a watchdog group that raises alarm at every perceived mistake that OCS may make. It has a more complex mandate. It is the responsibility of the panel to provide a forum for informed, thoughtful, and constructive dialogue among stakeholders, primarily the families and communities served by OCS. It should do so through its review, outreach, and advocacy functions. This can be done. However, it requires a structured relationship with OCS. It needs enhanced capacity that this structure would bring. While additional funds can help, funding will not resolve all challenges. The current budget of $100,000 can be stretched much further with a more structured relationship. That is the central point of this recommendation. In response, OCS cites CRP's current lack of capacity for not relying on CRP, but ignores the idea of enhancing CRP's capacity for OCS to be able to rely on it. This year we took on 4 goals, and as you see, a couple of them are retained from last year. And CRP often ends up not being able to complete its work on some of the goals that it adopts. Most often it is because the panel did not have all the information and data it needs to adequately assess the practice or policy on a particular goal. These goals the panel adopted for this year may not be accomplished as planned. The panel is behind on its planned site visits. Much of this delay is for 2 reasons. The panel had a considerable delay due to change in staff over this last summer. The second reason is the panel is hosting the next national CRP conference in Anchorage this May. So there is some organization that's consuming the panel's time. As you all may have heard in the news, that Representative Wilson called for a grand jury investigation of OCS. The grand jury concluded that it is the CRP's statutory responsibility to be conducting such a review. The panel received all materials from the grand jury. In addition, we are compiling information from all public hearings recently held by Representative Wilson. This review will be a major challenge for the panel's current capacity. As you can see, the panel plans to release an action plan by June 30th with regard to this review. And this will be just an action plan. I noticed yesterday there was a news article in the Fairbanks Newsminer, Daily Newsminer, mentioning July 30th as the deadline, but it's June 30th, and this is just an action plan. It is not the actual action. So the review will not be completed. It just states how the review is going to go forward. I mentioned the lack of capacity several times now. And again, capacity not in dollars. The panel needs more volunteers that can perform various tasks. It needs a better recruitment and retention strategy. It needs more instrumental partnerships with similar review bodies. There are about 10 different review mechanisms that oversee one or the other aspect of OCS. OCS is probably one of the most reviewed agencies in the state, in the state government. The panel needs to gain visibility and trust among the general population. Everyone needs to understand the role and responsibility of CRP and in turn hold CRP accountable for its work. I mentioned 10 different review bodies. That includes the court, CJA task force, there's an internal QA review, there's a federal review that happens every now and then, there's a so there are multiple mechanisms that review the work of OCS from different perspectives at different points of time. Every mechanism has a clear and specific role. Within that matrix of reviews, CRP occupies a special, specific role, and that needs to be clarified. More importantly, the misperception that CRP is a watchdog agency must be corrected. It needs a reorientation as a mechanism for public participation and community engagement in child protection. The panel has been discussing this with OCS, and we set ourselves a 3-year timeline to achieve this reorientation. We wish to adopt a participatory evaluation framework with those elements on the slide. participatory evaluation will be a systems-focused, robust recruitment and retention strategy, data-driven review and outreach, collaborative and constructive relationship with OCS. In addition to all that, the panel needs support from the legislature. I hope the panel will be invited back every year at present to present its findings. This is important to note, not only provide a public forum for constructive dialogue, but also to hold the CRP accountable for its recommendations and actions. There are very few restrictions on who can volunteer for CRP. Being a legislator is not one of them, so you can be on the panels. If you do not have the time, you may know others that might be a good fit. To help with visibility in Alaska, which has been one of the challenges for CRP in Alaska, is to improve our collective understanding of CRP, and Alaska CRP is hosting this year's National CRP Conference. It goes without saying that you all are invited. Registration is open now. We hope to see you all there.
Thank you, Doctor, for presenting today to us. This is an issue that's important to me in terms of the evaluation and oversight of all state departments, and I think this is a great start for looking at this division within the Department of Health and Social Services. With that, we'll entertain questions. I'm just going to start off with a question that I have, sort of a long question. Doctor, what is the percentage of recommendations that OCS actually begins to not just begin to implement, but actually completes to implement? Because I'm looking at your 2015-16, let me get to the right page here. And looking at some of the recommendations that for, let's say, recommendation one, OCS continues to implement the plan from panels 2013 to 2014 recommendations of the intake policy. And so I just didn't know how many of these items in here are continuations that they actually complete through. Did you guys track the entire implementation of some of these things, or it says, I guess that's sort of the question is, on the actual completion of the recommendations. Do you know just a ballpark percentage?
Senator Wilson, that's a difficult question to answer for multiple reasons, but I will give it a shot. The recommendations from the panel are not binding. OCS is certainly responsible to consider them. They might accept them or reject them or say some of it is acceptable and some of it is not. In either case, they need to respond on their position. And more often than not, they accept the recommendations from the panel. Whether they're implemented or not, the panel does not have the capacity to track and figure out what percentage of these recommendations were actually implemented and in what shape or form. For example, the intake policy that the recommendations on the intake policy that you mentioned, we had several small changes that we recommended on the intake policy. But at the same time, OCS was moving from a regional intake to a central intake. And the word from OCS was, once we are through this transition, we will implement all these recommendations because they're all making sense to us. The transition hasn't completed yet. They're still working on several components of that transition. They do have a statewide intake supervisor. We have to wait and see how many of those recommendations will actually be implemented.
Thank you. Other questions?
Yes.
Senator Begich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doctor, under the state statute, there's section 225 is cooperation with state panel, and it says, if I can read this, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
The department shall provide the panel access to information on child abuse and neglect cases that is necessary for the panel to carry out its duties, and B, the department shall serve as staff to the state panel as requested by the panel members. Again, I point out that these are shall and not may clauses in here. Is the department responsive to your information requests?
Senator Biggs, to the chair, the responsiveness of the agency has changed over the years. I began working with the panel in 2012, and I distinctly remember very little data was shared. Of course, at the time, the request for data was also probably not clear, and there was no protocol, and is still missing. There is no protocol for data sharing. The panel has a statutory authority to request any information that it needs or it sees necessary. The agency does not refuse to share data, but there are so many barriers for the agency to freely share data every time the panel requests it, one of them being confidentiality. The panel is, due to various reasons, we have a group of volunteers on the panel, and there may be the perception that, well, the panel may not know exactly how to handle confidential data. Are there structures to protect confidentiality of individual clients? And what is the purpose of the request for a data? So all these questions are unanswered. There is no protocol existing to share data.
Follow-up, Senator Begich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would hope that the department would note that part of the it would be illegal for, under the statute, for a member of the panel to disclose confidential information, because you have a confidentiality section, 235, that actually governs that. So the department ought to know that. That they don't goes back to, I think, the earlier point that you brought up that I concur with, which is that the commissioner shall, by regulation, there's no protocol because there's no regulation. The commissioner has had, the department has had 15 years to develop regulations to determine the protocol and how the, essentially how the CRP should be used. Is that not correct? That you're governed by confidentiality and that there is this lack of protocols due to lack of regulation?
Senator Begich, through the chair, yes, that is correct. There are civil penalties on members for breaching the confidentiality.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the time. Frustrating to me.
Any other questions from committee members? Senator Michiki?
Unfortunately, the retention rate of the OCS is similar to the retention rate of the panel. What is the reason for panel members dropping off about 30%, a little higher than 30% this year? Is that something you want to talk about?
Senator McKee, through the chair, yes, certainly. The retention and recruitment for the panel has consistently been a challenge for a long time. In the past, the way panel operates, or the modes of operation, have also changed. I mentioned site reviews earlier. In the past, site reviews were conducted by every panel member traveling to a particular site. So if we had 6 members or 7 members on the panel, all would travel. So we couldn't afford to do more than 3 site visits a year. One of the things we did in the last few years is question that. Why should all the panel members go to these site visits, and what is the purpose of it? So we structured it differently, and now we have only 2 or 3 members going, and there is more purpose to the site visit. The site visit review report changed in structure and tone. Lots of things changed. So as we change things on the panel and how it operates, when a new panel member comes on board, it is very hard to convey exactly what their role is and what they can contribute, how they can contribute, and what role they can play on the panel. And given the lack of structure to the relationship, oftentimes, and this is not unusual or this is not unique for Alaska, oftentimes there are contentious discussions between OCS and CRP, and not everybody is warm to contention. Most people might not want to be confrontational. So it takes certain structure for members to be comfortable in that role. And a volunteer must feel that their time is valuable and valued for their contribution. If there is no direction, if there is no clear structure, if there is no expectations that are clear and outcomes that are expected, volunteers are better off taking their time elsewhere. That's part of the reason why we have such turnover on CRP.
Follow up,
Senator Michiki.
So I don't find that your recommendations are pointing fingers at OCS. I think it's been I read them positively, and but that is a CRP improvement objective, right? It's not an OCS improvement objective, it's a CRP improvement objective. Is that something that you're taking seriously on how to make the CRP the most effective? And is there any way that we can help, other than you trying to enlist five committee members here on the CRP recently? Is there anything else that we can do to support you?
Senator McKinsey, through the chair, yes, the panel over the last several years worked very hard to keep a constructive but critical tone. Being critical is our job. Mm-hmm. Being critical is not necessarily wrong. And being critical does not mean that we somehow dislike OCS. There is no connection between those two perspectives. Being critical is our job. But we can be constructive and critical at the same time only when there is structure to our relationship. And that structure is monitored by somebody. And the, like I mentioned earlier, there are two different bodies of people that I can think of that can monitor and should be monitoring the CRP-OCS relationship. That is either the legislature or the general public. General public's monitoring of CRP and CRP's enterprise would be hard and difficult because it's so diverse, it's diffused. The authority is diffused among the public, but in the legislature it's much more focused. So this is a great example of the Senate having, a Senate committee having CRP come present every year and asking the OCS to respond. This is a public dialogue, and you can help us by monitoring what we're doing.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you have a budget of $100,000. You make site visits. Do you have actual staff for the panel, and how many hours does that individual work or individuals?
Senator Geisel, through the chair, we have $100,000 every year as a budget, and the current contract says the panel can't exceed more than $30,000 in travel. So $70,000 is set up for staff support, and that is through a contract. And the entire $100,000 budget goes through the contract. The CRP does not have a legal identity by itself, so it's not a nonprofit or anything like that. It's a statutory body within the state, so it doesn't have a bank account. It goes through the contract. All the budget is routed through the contract. Out of the $70,000, the contractor is expected to coordinate the panel's activities, which means which includes coordinating or scheduling all the meetings, managing the volunteer hours, keeping people informed and engaged, and connecting with legislators or committees and setting up meetings, all that coordination, clerical support, including writing reports and meeting minutes, whatnot, and evaluation work, because there is a lot of data analysis to be done, evaluation work, and general training and other information for the panel. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done for a functional panel. $70,000 is not going to be enough for any contractor to meet all those demands. So the panel has to find innovative ways to recruit volunteers to conduct some of that work. That is, for an example, that is the value that I add. Being a researcher, I can bring data analysis skills to the panel. That's the value I add. So that's an example of how we can recruit members with specific skill sets from different parts of the state to get the work done.
Senator Geisel?
So therein, I mean, I'm thinking about the issues you've described just in terms of the organization of the mm-hmm. panel. And I'm putting it in the context of a regulatory board, which I'm very familiar with, having served and chaired one for several years. And I can see where you are highly challenged with predominantly volunteers doing this work. And I can also see where, because one of the things I scratched my head about is no regulations in 15 years. Now, granted, the department itself or the division of OCS has responsibility there, but, you know, a regulatory board actually proposes regulations. But when you have an executive director that is filling a role like that, an administrative role, robustly filling that role, they're drafting those regulations that the panel then would send forward. Do you see what I mean? I can see where this has been really constrained by lack of that person. And it was just not too long ago that it raised to 100,000, right? It was 35 before. You can remind me here.
When the HB 53 in 2005 had 63,500.
Yes, and thank you, by the way, for your testimony in writing. This is very helpful to be able to refer back to. But I can see where this hasn't really been fully supported by the legislature, and why a lot of these things kind of have fallen by the wayside. This is hard work for volunteers. Thank you for the information.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Baggage?
Yeah, I wanted to actually thank you, too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm kind of having a mind meld with Senator Giesel here on the idea that I wish you had the ability to forward the regulations you want to see adopted, because we would have the ability here as well to review those and see why and ask the question why they weren't adopted, mm-hmm. you know, of the division. But I look forward to hearing the division's responses to these questions that we've asked and that you've helped us think about. I really commend you for your work and the volunteer work. Serving on an advisory committee, which also was voluntary. You know, we had the same struggles, and we were lucky we had a division that helped us write our regulations. And I would just hope that we get to that point in time. I really do.
Can I respond? Senator Biggs, through the chair. Last year, when we had the chance to meet with the commissioner of DHSS, we brought this up, and it was acknowledged clearly that, yes, you do need regulations, but one of the points was, well, why do you want the department to write the regulations for you, because don't you see that as a constricting factor for you? Which is partially accurate. That is true. As an independent panel, which we would like to be independent, and that is true. However, the panel's relationship with OCS is not just a watchdog, as I mentioned. It is more complex than that. It needs to be collaborative and cooperative relationship. So it's not necessarily a bad thing that the department writes regulations for OCS or CRP. So in that spirit, we decided, because I teach at UAA, I was going to teach a policy analysis course in the fall last year, and I proposed that my students can work on regulations for the panel. So we reviewed 8 different states of how they operate and how they can suggest regulations for Alaska. Being a volunteer, the class was successful, but I did not finish the report yet. I need to frame it well and submit it to OCS and DHSS so they can go from there. But I can only stretch it so far. My primary role as an instructor in the class is to make sure the class is going well, not to serve the panel. So there are limitations of how much I can stretch the resources I have personally.
Follow-up, Senator Gitzel? Senator Mitchick?
Whenever you get through, Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, sort of that relationship being a sort of intertwined relationship, part of this also has to do with some of the funding, how the funding can be allocated as well, because OCS is also funded through Department of Health and Social Services. WHCHL has your budget as well, while their budget now going to have numbers here. I guess this question for Wednesday is, their budget sort of been flatlining for the past few years. Your budget has been fluctuating up and down according to what resources the panel has to. Can you comment upon that?
Sure, Senator Wilson. The panel's budget has been $100,000 at least a year or two before I joined the panel in 2012. There was only one year that it went down. That was in last fiscal year 2016. And the budget was $100,000. The contract was a new contract. The contractor bid for $82,000 to be competitive. And I was told that the $100,000 that was budgeted for the panel is the panel's money, and the panel has to just request when they're ready for it. In January or so, we sent a letter with clear evidence or background information saying why we need this additional money and what we're going to do with it. We got a response from OCS saying, because of tight budget times, that money is no longer available for the panel. So we took on $17,000 budget cut in the middle of the year when we were not ready for it. Did we accomplish everything that we wanted to accomplish? To a large extent, yes. Because much of the work that the panel does is done by volunteers. So we still could pull off most of the stuff that we wanted to do. That doesn't mean that we don't have ways to spend $17,000 additional dollars. We could have done more.
Thank you. Senator Manchiki?
Well, this is probably the most emotional issue that I've dealt with parents that come to the office that have, and I put them in three categories, and I hope I'm not oversimplifying. There's folks emotionally not ready to be parents, folks ready but not prepared to be parents, just haven't been in a household that sort of prepared them for those natural parenting skills, and people unfit to be parents, right? Three different kinds. And OCS's role, obviously, is to protect kids under the people unfit. Spills over a little bit into the other two. But I wonder if the legislature has been clear. I mean, so we have the other departments that partner with their folks that have some oversight, right? Partner quite well on writing regulations that end up being supported and being guiding documents. But I wonder if the legislative intent has been clear enough, right? I mean, we want to protect kids, but the impact on families has been, well, I can't imagine. I just can't imagine someone removing one of my four. I wonder what the best way for us to kind of understand the path we've taken as a legislature on both statutory support and direction, legislative intent, and how we've pushed or directed the department to engage at a higher level. Mr. Chairman, I don't know if your staff or our staff can help, but it would be nice to understand that history if we've been clear on a direction.
This is an issue that's been brought up. I've worked with hundreds of families throughout the whole process of OCS systems. I think every program within OCS I've been involved in one way or another. And with the rates, especially in my district, just going up in terms of how many folks are, this is something that we'd like to sort of address on a large issue, is sort of why we've asked sort of the Citizens Review Panel to come to present and then have OCS. So this is something that hopefully as we look at other legislation or other issues to help embrace and help OCS to family reunification mm-hmm. piece of it, so we can help some of these families, the first two categories, I would say, to help them retain custody of their children and without the out-of-home placements is an area that I think that we would help and better our communities as a whole. So it is something that I'm looking at for this upcoming interim as one of those projects to bring forth back by next year. But yes, I'm open to working with anybody with those goals in mind, or office. Okay. Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would be negligent if I didn't highlight programs like Beacon Hill, which is a private sector organization, faith-based, that tries to intercede before it reaches the point of separating a child from a family. Because of the awareness that we have placed a huge burden, government is stepping into a very personal issue, parents and children, and sometimes government isn't the answer for those kinds of issues. So I just commend programs like Beacon Hill to you as you're digging into this subject. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments for Dr.? Yes, Senator Baggage.
Doctor, how do people get appointed to the board? What is the process, and is there a limit on how many can serve?
Senator Biggs, to the chair, there is no limit on how many members can be on the panel, and there is no limit on how long a panel member can serve. There is a formal appointment process, but it is self-appointed by the panel members. If somebody wants to be a member of the panel, they can apply to the panel, and they're required to fill an application form, submit their CV, and three references. The coordinator helps the panel to form a little subcommittee led by the vice chair of the committee. And the entire panel first reviews the application and suggests whether we should go forward to the next step or should we just say, no, we can't take you as a panel member. And very few are, I'm not aware of anybody not making to the second step because there are not major criteria that you have to meet as long as there are not major red flags like previous criminal conduct or something like that. So second step is for this vice chair to lead a small subcommittee to interview the potential member. And subcommittee members of the panel will also check with the references. And then we go to the next step of recommending to the panel. The small subcommittee will recommend to the panel what the next step is, and most times it is always accept them as a member. Since I've been on the chair, we had one instance when we said no to a panel member. Well, two instances when we said no to the panel member. One was because there was a perceived conflict of interest that the potential panel member may have given her past background. And that was contested. And the panel could not substantiate its own claim that there can be a potential conflict of interest. And me being the chair at the time, I said, well, if we can't substantiate what we're claiming, then we should not claim it. We retracted it, and we had the member on the panel. Unfortunately, the panel member did not last for long on the panel. The lesson learned there was one of the things we make it very clear to potential members is it is impossible to have or it's impossible not to have an opinion about OCS, whether you strongly support or you strongly oppose what OCS does. OCS has a mandate, and it has to do what it has to do. Your opinions matter to you as an individual, and we are not asking potential members to discard their own opinions or biases. But what we expect the panel members to do is explicitly state their biases, whether for or against, so everybody else on the panel is aware where they're coming from when we are assessing a particular situation. And we warn, or we make it very clear, or try as hard as we can to make it very clear to any potential members, this is what we expect. This is how the panel works. It is a cordial atmosphere. Everybody works together. This has to be a team. The voting is not very significant on the panel because we don't make decisions. This is a conversation. This is a dialogue. We are facilitating public participation, and we want to provide as good information as possible to OCS to better their own processes. This is not criticizing OCS for the sake of criticizing it. So we make that very clear. And then we also informally check with OCS before we bring on a new panel member. If they know anything about this potential member, that raises red flags for them. That doesn't mean that the panel will go along with OCS's recommendation, but we just want to make sure that we checked there.
Senator Richicki?
Just a quick one. Curious if there has been a panel member that was a parent of a successfully reunified family since the inception of the panel to date.
Senator McKitchie, I'm through the chair. I'm not aware of all the panel members' individual personal backgrounds since its inception in 2005. Many members came and left the panel. But there have been foster parents on the panel. And they've had good, successful relationships with OCS. There have been past OCS employees on the panel who were at OCS, left OCS, and joined the panel. There were senior administrators in state government that were on the panel. To the extent I know, I was the first academic faculty member on the panel, and we had until recently another one. So there is a broad variety of professionals from different disciplines, but reunification, I'm not really familiar with every individual story, but there were former foster parents. There was a CASA worker. And my experience or my understanding from what I can remember talking to them about their individual stories or connections with OCS, it was always a mixture. There were good experiences, there were bad experiences, depending on the situation, depending on who they were interacting with, and the challenges and opportunities that they faced at the time. It was always a mixture.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Vallapalli, for your presentation and your work that you do for the on behalf of Alaska citizens here today, and we appreciate your presentation, your time to coming out and join us. We've intended to bring back a CS for Senate Bill 83 on the vulnerable adults, but that got held up with a lot of the work in the other body with Ledge Legal, and so we plan to have it on Wednesday. This concludes our HES committee business for today. Are there any members' closing comments? Hearing none, on Wednesday, we'll hear from Christy Lawton, the Director of Health and Social Services, OCS, Office of Children's Services, and she will provide a brief overview of the department's mission and new initiatives and respond to any issues or questions that might arise from today's presentation. Thank you, everyone, for joining today, and we are adjourned at 2:45 p.m.